D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Let's go to our phone line. Driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. We are pleased to be joined by Belmont men's basketball coach, Casey Alexander. Hi, Casey. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us. So your team coming off of a big comeback win yesterday at Murray State. For those who missed it, the Bruins trailed by 19 early in the second half, but outscored Murray State 63-31 in the second half. How many comebacks like that have you been a part of, Casey?
Not many. Thank goodness, not many. But it was nice to get that one. You know, strangely enough, we had one earlier in the season at Drake. We were down 25 in the second half and won. So probably my two greatest ones ever have been in the same month, last 6 weeks anyway.
A big part of that comeback against Murray State was freshman guard Jack Smiley, who had a career-best 21 points off the bench. What do you have in Smiley?
Yeah, the guy, unusual confidence for a true freshman, hard to be a league guard and assume that kind of minutes in such a good league, playing for a good team and really basically dominate a game. But he's a really talented offensive player. We've got three freshmen in our top seven or eight that are all contributing pretty mightily. So it's a luxury for us.
Talking to Casey Alexander, Belmont Bruins head coach. They are 24-4, 14-3 in the Missouri Valley. Casey, let's start with the league as a whole, because as you mentioned, you guys took the leap of faith to join that league a few years ago. You've now watched your team and your program evolve with that league. Now that you've been in there a few years, how much better do you think that league is, with all due respect to the leagues you've been in the past?
Yeah, significantly. I mean, just so much better resourced, better facilities, better coaches, just across the board. There's not any area you could look at and say it's not significantly better. But by comparison, I mean, I think our league right now is the ninth best league in the country, one ahead of the American, which is Memphis and those guys. So if that tells you anything, it's a pretty good league. Whereas by contrast, the OVC is probably mid-20s maybe in strength. So quite a bit of difference.
So you guys, it's no secret. You guys, I'll let people know, 41% shooting from three-point range as a team, third best in the country. And it used to be if you had two or three guys hitting over 40%, that was pretty good. Now with the line moved back and with the team percentage like that, that is pretty remarkable. It's amazing to me, Casey, and you and I are from the same era. I thought it was a long shot when you had to hit it from 19.9. The NBA line seemed way back there, but these guys, they have the range these days. I guess they've grown up with it, but it's amazing how well the guys shoot.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and it is very interesting, and I can only say exactly what you just said. I mean, I think it's all they know, and so they're conditioned to shoot it from that range and make it from that range. You know, each time the line moved back, which is maybe two or three times since its origination, you know, you could see how it impacted players in that moment. You know, a guy that could shoot a decent percentage, you know, when they moved that line back a little bit, all of a sudden, you know, he couldn't make them anymore. You see that each time. But now the line's been where it is for the last several years, and I think people are just used to it. We're lucky. We've got a lot of really good shooters, that's for sure.
You guys have had to adjust without a guy that is obviously a big part of your team, and Nick McLean. But tell us how you guys have been able to manage it and really not skip a beat without him, because that's a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, for sure. And that better answers the Jack Smiley question from earlier. I mean, Nick McLean was an all-conference player when he went down with a knee injury. I mean, he's averaging over 6 assists a game and a double-figure score with great percentages and a really, really good defender. And so you lose that senior, sixth-year senior starting point guard as an all-conference player. It took us a while to adjust. And we're not as good. Our ceiling is not as high without him. I don't want to be misleading with that, but we've had to have guys step into new roles. And over time, they have been really, really serviceable at the least.
Is there any chance that you get him back, or is this your group going forward?
Yeah, he's working toward it, but, you know, we got three regular season games left and then the tournament, and I would love for him to come back and play and be available in any capacity, but it's literally a TBD every day. And so we're we're moving on as if he's not going to come back, and it'll just be kind of a cherry on top if we can get some minutes out of him before the season's over.
You're used to this because some of the leagues you've played in before have the early conference tournament. As you mentioned, the Missouri Valley is always one of those early conference tournaments, so you have to be kind of eyeing that right now, don't you?
Well, you know, it's not far off. We kind of have a unique situation this week. It's our bye week, so no midweek game this week for us. So 2 weeks of the regular season left, and then our tournament. And with a time change for our championship game's a CBS broadcast, and there were some Big Ten stuff going on that day. So I think our championship game is the first day, which is a Saturday, Sunday, actually. Yeah, and it's like at 11 o'clock, 11 or 12 o'clock. So it's really early in the pecking order as far as championship week goes.
Mm. Casey, what do you think of the it's just a couple of general college basketball questions. As more people are now starting to watch more games. But the way that the challenge system has come in, the flow of the game, how do you feel that has gone on? I was watching closely at the Vanderbilt game the other day. They've got a guy, I'm sure you do too, in hockey, of course, they've got these guys all the time locked in on that, watching replays to try to figure out which plays to challenge. What is your system like there?
Yeah, it's the exact same. We've got a guy who's really good at it, and he's sitting right there, and he's watching everything because I probably turn to him 25 times a game and say, did they get that call right? You know, was that a foul? I want to see that at the timeout, all those kinds of things. So, yeah, we're prompt and we're ready to go. You know, we're really limited on what we can challenge. So, and essentially it's out-of-bounds calls and maybe some goaltending things, but it's more out-of-bounds calls than anything else. And so, but we're ready when that time occurs. I think it's made the game way better. I mean, I think all of us enjoy watching games more this year than we have in the last several, where the referees, all with the right intentions and with a desire to get it exactly right every time, went to the monitor, you know, basically on every whistle sometimes.
Right.
You know, it was either the call itself or, hey, we're, you know, there's 3/10, you know, we're 3/10 off on this timing error, or let's just go make sure. So it's a much better process than it was.
How hard is it sometimes if one of your players says, it was off of him, I didn't touch it, and you want to believe him, right? But you have to kind of check your video guy, right?
Yeah, and you know there's just a lot of emotion involved. And, you know, all of us, no matter who we root for or coach for, we think we're right all the time, and all the calls against us are bad ones, and all the ones for us are good ones. So you have to keep a level head about it. And we actually talked about it a lot early in the season. I think we're in a groove now. We've done it enough that we know what we're looking for and kind of have a better feel for when the right time to challenge something is. You know, because we only get one, and if it's incorrect, then it's gone. You know, if you get it right, then you get one more and that's it. It's not as if we can just challenge everything that we want to challenge. So I've had a lot of referees this season say, well, you can challenge it. I'm like, I don't want to challenge it. There's 15 minutes to go in the first half, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather you just get it right and then I don't have to challenge it and we can just move on. But you know, that's just part of the game.
You've had, and of course Rick Byrd before you, you know, a really good formula at Belmont, and the consistency of the program has been really amazing. And everybody's had to adjust with the NIL and the transfers and things like that. What, as you've kind of settled into that, because I know it was not easy for anybody, but especially the way you guys ran the program for so many years.
Yeah.
How has that evolution been? What's the right formula for you now?
Gosh, I wish there was a formula. You know, I think what we've learned over time is just, I mean, literally the old adage, control what you can control. I mean, we just try to do the best job we can with the players we have so that we can keep as many as possible. And then we figure out, after it's all said and done, who's left on the roster and what we need to go do to replace them. And then we start over, you know. But even out of the portal, when we're looking for someone, we're still looking for the same kind of player and the same kind of people and the same kind of culture fits for Belmont, style fits as far as style of play, you know, that it's not totally disruptive. But at the same time, as you mentioned, just, you know, our bread and butter has always been signing high school players, developing them, let them grow old with the program and have some retention and sustainability. And those days are gone. I mean, you look at, I mean, Jacoby Gillespie's the, you know, he's an all-SEC player at Tennessee, and Cade Tyson's the leading scorer at Minnesota. Malik Dia just had 35 at Ole Miss the other day. We got Will Richard, who was a national champion last year at Florida, plus a handful of others that have gone to Power Four. You can't lose those kind of guys and just carry on as if nothing happened.
That is for sure. With that in mind, it's so interesting to watch the way college sports in general have gone. If you can get the right mix, it does seem like if you've got good freshmen, which you do, and you've got experience, that maybe the gap is narrow. There's certainly a different way of putting together a team, even in the Power Four leagues. I think we've discovered that the one and done, four freshmen and a couple of guys sprinkled in, that doesn't work as well as it used to.
Yeah, I think it's made both extremes worse. Like, you can invest heavily and accumulate a roster with the right leadership and strike it rich. No doubt about that. But you can also do all those things and deal with a lot of culture problems and a lot of irons in the fire, and it can be real misery. Like, it really is. And you can look at any sport and kind of pick and choose and point at and figure who some of those teams are, you know. But you can also invest wisely, whether that's leadership, coaching, roster, revenue sharing, all those things, and still have a culture in place and some character within your program that will allow some sustainability. I look at Clark Lee at Vanderbilt and what he's doing. You know, that's not a flash in the pan. That's the right leadership with the right investment, with the right kind of players and a system, and they're built to win. Whereas, to your point, in the past, I'm not sure we could say that about Vanderbilt football. And I'm sorry, I probably get myself in trouble here locally for saying stuff.
I don't think you're wrong. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's look down the road another couple of years. I think I asked you this probably when it started, the first NIL transfer, when this whole system just blew up, is, do you think the kids over time will start to value the continuity, staying in the same place, more than they did the newness of it? It's like, hey, if I don't like it here, I'm going to go over there. Do you think it will cycle that way as we move forward?
I don't think it can get much worse than it is. maybe it would start tipping back the other way. But the almighty dollar is a real thing. And no matter what, it's pretty hard as a young kid, you know, to turn down big bucks when all it requires of you is to make a change and go to a new school. You know, it's a shame, and it's harmful to a lot of kids and a lot of teams and a lot of families. But that's where we are right now.
Do you find that you're getting a higher level of freshmen than you did before, because maybe some kids are realizing that it may not be as easy to jump in at a higher level and play a lot? And the way this thing is going, it seems like that's disadvantageous sometimes.
I definitely, it's yes, we have access in recruiting to players that historically we would not have had access to. And our league is some of that, you know, moving up in level and being able to sell some different things is part of that. But there's also a greater pool of talent out there that's just not getting the opportunities at the Power Five level that they used to, because those Power Five guys are more concerned about transfers and so forth. So yes, the answer to that is definitely yes. But I'll also say this. It even hits us the other way. Like, we have not done anything with revenue sharing for incoming freshmen, and there were a dozen really good players that we recruited the heck out of last year that are perfect Belmont kids that we didn't have a chance to get in the end because just didn't have the resources to get there.
Belmont men's basketball coach Casey Alexander has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donick, the Bruins are back in action at home on Saturday against Indiana State. Casey, thank you so much for your time. Good luck against Indiana State.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. And if you want to go to that game, Belmont hosting Indiana State at the Curb Event Center this Saturday night, be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Belmont take on Indiana State at the Curb Event Center this Saturday night. Tip-off is at 7. Caller number 3, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I have an Olympic hockey thought that I would like to get off my chest. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.